there's a special mitzvah on Yom Kippur, according to the Shari Tshuva, to arouse your neshama and do tshuva. According to the Rambam, there's no special mitzvah on Yom Kippur, but Yom Kippur is the deadline. I hate to use that word when it comes to Yom Kippur, but it's the limit. Really, you should do tshuva as soon as you do an aveira. But basically, you can't delay it past Yom Kippur. At that point, you are punished not only for the aveira, but for not doing tshuva on the aveira too. It's the limit for the year. Whatever it is, there's vade a mitzvah to do tshuva by the end of Yom Kippur. The end of Yom Kippur, it's what's machaper, and therefore you have till the end. But we like to start early, so we even start doing tshuva erev Yom Kippur, or during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, or whatever. But it's not that there's but there's, according to the Shari Tshuva, a special mitzvah to do tshuva on Yom Kippur itself. Okay. And therefore, since there's a mitzvah to do tshuva, it's a good idea to know what it's all about. Okay. And even though we pretty much have an idea, but it's a good idea to go over, like any mitzvah, right, you know, what an esrog and lulav is, and how you mekayim that mitzvah, and what matzah is, or whatever. It's good idea to know what tshuva is. So the first component of tshuva is recognizing that you did something wrong. Hakaras hachet. Because if you don't recognize you did anything wrong, there's nothing to tshuva for. If you think that you're a tzaddik and never do anything wrong, there's not what are you going to do tshuva for? So that seems to be pretty obvious, but it entails three things, maybe more, but three things I want to mention. One is the Gemara says, "Haroa yisurim boyim alav yifashpesh b'maisav yimashmesh b'maisav." You see that you're experiencing suffering, calamities. So you should realize that it's probably a result of things that you've done. Check and see if you can find something to attribute those sufferings to. Pishpesh v'lo matza. If you investigated and you didn't find anything, then yitlein b'bitl Torah. You should attribute, seemingly, the suffering to Bittul Torah. The obvious question with that is, Bittul Torah is one of the biggest aveiras there is. How could you have investigated and found nothing and then attribute to Bittul Torah? You should have found the Bittul Torah. Secondly, that only applies to half the population, because women are not judged on Bittul Torah. They have no mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and therefore they don't get punished for wasting time from Talmud Torah. So to make a blanket statement, if you see suffering coming on you, you should yitlein b'bitl Torah, it doesn't apply to women, is a little difficult. Therefore, there's another pshat there. There are many other pshat that I answer these questions. There's a very cute pshat, which I don't think is really pshat in the Gemara, but it's a very practical pshat. And that is, when it says if you haven't found anything, attribute it, not attribute the suffering to bitl Torah. Attribute the fact that you didn't find anything to bitl Torah. You probably have plenty of averas, you don't know what they are. Right? Somebody who, you know, knows about Shabbos, just that, you know, he eats gefilte fish Friday night, and he maybe lights candles before, and that's all he knows about Shabbos, is going to think he's a tzaddik when it comes to Shabbos. He eats his gefilte fish, he lights his candles, what else could there be? If you start learning that there's much more to Shabbos than just that, then you'll find out you did plenty of things wrong. You may be mechallel Shabbos every Shabbos. But if you don't learn anything, ignorance is bliss. You can fool yourself into thinking you're a tzaddik if you don't learn. So part of the first component of tshuva, of hakaras hachet, is learn about those things that you know that you're ignorant about. Maybe you'll find out.
It's not just a cute shan in the Gemara. The Gra says that.
The Gra says that?
Yeah.
Okay, first I hear that the Gra says
that.
Okay. Okay. The first I hear that the Gra said that. It's a pshetl in the thing. Okay, it could be. In any case, whatever. Okay, so that's one idea in this first component of tshuva. Second idea. You could be, you know what's right and what's wrong, but you fool yourself. People are very biased when they look at themselves, and you can distort what's right into what's wrong, and what's wrong is right, and think you're still a tzaddik, even though you've done things wrong, because you don't recognize the fact that they're wrong. You know they're wrong, but this isn't what the thing is. This is something different. One of the ways of knowing whether you're fooling yourself or not is look at somebody else who did the exact same thing you did that you think is okay. See how you look at them. Usually, you'll see them in a much more critical light than you see yourself. And then you'll know that, put it back on yourself, the Baal Shem Tov says that sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam lets a person see things that he's done and sees it in other people so he can judge them, and by that doing so, judges himself. That's what David HaMelech did when he gave the story about the poor guy with the lamb and the rich guy who took it away. Right? He made a judgment, and Nosson the Navi told him, you're talking about yourself. But by yourself, you didn't see it. You saw it when it was a marshal to somebody else. And the third thing is that sometimes you know what's right and wrong. You don't fool yourself. You know you did something wrong. But then you make excuses, justifications, and by the time you're finished, it's not wrong anymore. And that's what I always like to say. A nice shot. I saw somebody quote me recently on the internet, but it's a nice vort. The Rambam says that the minimum of vidui on Yom Kippur is three words. We do vidui over and over again, and the minimum is three words. Aval anachnu chatan, but we have sinned. So really, but aval doesn't mean but. It has many meanings, and one of the meanings is be'emes, aval. It means verily. That's what it really means. But I want to explain it, even if it means but. Or how do you start a sentence with but? But we have sinned. But what? Right? If you put something before it, then it makes sense. But the Rambam says all you have to say is those three words. So I was thinking that the whole year we say those exact same three words when we confess our sins, but in a different order. The whole year we say anachnu chatanu aval. After that aval comes a million excuses and justifications, and there's no more sin. So on Yom Kippur, you have to change the order. And after the aval, you still end up with anachnu chatan. So the first component of tshuva is hakoras hacheit, which entails learning, being objective, and not making excuses. Second, once you recognize you've done something wrong, then comes one of two things. Either you feel bad that you did it, and mamele you stop doing it. And the Shari Tshuva says that is the sequence by many psukim that seem to say, first I regret that I did this wrong thing. Because if you don't regret doing it, you know I did something wrong, but I don't really care. So you're not going to do tshuva. You have to care that you did something wrong and regret that you did it, and then stop doing the avera. You don't stop doing the avera, you can't do tshuva for an avera you continue doing. You have to stop doing it. So says the Shari Tshuva, there are sources that say that first you regret it, then you stop. But there are other sources that say first you stop and then you regret it. So which is it? Says the Shari Tshuva, it depends on the type of chet. A chet that a person has done out of character one time, not used to doing it, then probably after you do that chet, you feel remorse right away. Right? You feel bad that you did it, and you went and you ate something treif. You know, mamash is treif. Not, you know, it wasn't Mahadrin or it wasn't the Hashgachas that we have or whatever. Somebody came to me this week. I got to give them credit that they took to heart what I said. They had used, by mistake or with some kind of excuse, a Hashgacha that we don't use. And one of the Mahadrin Hashgachas that we don't use here. They want to know if they had a kasher their whole kitchen. I said, oh no, that's not treif. It's just, you know, we're Mahadrin not to rely on that thing. But the Chas V'Shalom, to consider treif, they go kasher your kitchen. It's just Koshuva people who say that it's okay. You know, there's a difference between being machmir and something that I'm considering something treif. But in any case, but you really ate something treif, right? You decided you want a ham sandwich and that's it, and you ate that ham sandwich. Probably while the meat was in your mouth, you really felt bad about what you're doing, and maybe you spit it out or you stopped doing it at least. That's a chait that you're not in the habit of doing, you did out of character. Probably is going to lead you to remorse almost immediately. And then that will be the incentive to stop doing it. To stop eating the ham sandwich if you feel bad about it. Okay. But averas that you're in the habit of doing, you got into the habit. So kivan shavara adam avera v'shama bo nasos lo keheter. Right? Averas you're in the habit of doing, you lose the sensitivity to the fact that they're wrong. And you begin to think they're okay. You don't even think about it. The person speaks lashon hara. He doesn't even think about it, right? I consider it lashon hara. And not that I think it's right, I know it's wrong. But I just in the habit of doing it. So it's impossible to feel remorse about something that you're in the habit of doing. So there you have to stop first, and as you get out of the habit, then you'll be able to look back and have remorse. It's like a person who smokes. If you're a chain smoker, you can't regret smoking. You just smoke every day. It's something you do naturally. When will you regret smoking? If you stop smoking for a while. And the farther you get away from it, the more you'll be able to look back and feel remorse for what you did in the past. But when you're in the midst of it, it's impossible to feel remorse. You're in the habit of doing it. There's only one problem. If you're in the habit of doing it and you don't have any remorse, what's going to stop you from doing it? Why are you going to stop? I understand if you regret something, you'll stop doing it. But if you don't regret it, why would you stop? The answer is there are things that can force you to stop, even if you don't regret something. With the smoker, right? He goes for a checkup, developed a cough. The doctor says you have the beginnings of emphysema. If you don't stop smoking, in 6 months you'll be dead. So that is a good incentive to stop smoking, even if you don't regret smoking. I don't regret it. I love smoking. I'd love to continue. But I make an intellectual cheshbon that if I don't stop, in 6 months I'm going to have to stop anyway, so I might as well stop above ground than beneath the ground. So it's kedai to stop, even though I don't want to stop. I enjoy doing this. I don't regret it. But as you get farther and farther away from the smoking and you stop for a while and you get out of the habit, then you can look back and regret ever doing it. So in those sins that are habitual, the regret follows stopping it, and what makes you stop has to be some kind of outside stimulus, like Yom Kippur's coming or something like that, right? That I have no choice, I have to stop. And sins that are not habitual, there probably the regret will come before you stop and cause you to stop doing it. Right, now comes the ikkar of tshuva. Those are all the stages to lead you to want to do tshuva. You know you're doing something wrong, you regret it, you stop doing it. Now correct the past. That's tshuva. Tshuva is not stopping to do the avera. Tshuva is after you stop doing the avera, try to correct what you've done in the past. So now the tshuva, the correction for the past, is two things with a third qualification. The two things basically are charata and kabbalah la'asid. You have to regret doing the sin in the past and commit yourself never to do it again. Now, we've explained in the past in great detail that there are two aspects to every sin. There's the king aspect and the doctor aspect. The king aspect is that the king wants discipline. He wants people to be have self-control, have order, right? It's good for people to do that, so he makes decrees. And this way, if you obey them and you exercise self-control and discipline, you'll be rewarded. And if you don't obey them, you'll be punished. Suddenly, the Rabban Shem gave us mitzvahs. He'll reward us if we listen to him. He'll punish us if we don't listen to him. The punishment comes from the king. It's external. And there may or may not be anything intrinsically valuable about the command itself. It's just a command that the king gave you that he wants you to be obedient to him and to listen to him. The example we always give is, king commands, nobody eats watermelon in my kingdom. If you eat watermelon, you get your head cut off. So there's nothing intrinsically wrong with eating watermelon. But if you eat the watermelon, the king's going to punish you. Not the watermelon, the king. Or mitzvahs and maveras, most of them have another aspect. The doctor advising the patient. Go to the doctor for a checkup, and he says you are deathly allergic to watermelon. If you eat watermelon, your toes are going to turn green, then your feet, then your legs, and you're finished in 20 minutes. So I advise you not to eat watermelon. If you eat the watermelon, the doctor's not going to punish you. The sin itself is going to punish you. And that's why we talk about two kinds of yira. Yira shamayim and yira shchet. Yira shamayim, we're afraid of the king who will punish us if we do what's wrong. And yira shchet, we're afraid of the sin itself, which will be detrimental to us. So, and we've explained in the past that these ideas explain various kinds of sins and the results. Shogeg. You do a sin unintentionally. You wake up Shabbos afternoon after the challah, you think it's Sunday morning. Happens. And before you have a chance to catch yourself, you turn on the lights. You think you slept over at the Motzei Shabbos. You're waking up now, it's Sunday morning. You don't realize you just slept 2 hours in Shabbos afternoon. You turn on the light. You just were Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg. You thought it was Sunday. You knew what you were doing, but you thought it was Sunday. You didn't know it was Shabbos. So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you'd have to bring a carbon and spend a lot of money and effort and cry your eyes out and do tshuva. Right? What's the big deal? L'maisa, if the king said you can't eat watermelon, and I want to be a loyal subject to the king, I go home and throw away all my little red round watermelons, and I only save my big green apple. And I go and eat a slice of my apple in front of the king's palace. And the guards grab me and drag me to the king. And the king says, what's the problem? He says, this guy's been eating a slice of watermelon right in front of your palace. The king looks at me and says, that's true? He says, no, it's not true. I threw away all my little red round watermelons. I only saved my big green apple. I was eating a slice of my apple. The king says, let me see it. I show him a piece of the slice of the apple. He says, I hate to tell you this, that is watermelon. The little red round things, those are called apples. That's what you threw away. Go home, take your little red apples out of the garbage, and enjoy them. Throw away that big green thing, because that's the watermelon. That's what you're not allowed to do. The king is not going to cut off my head if he's a normal person. He knows I made a mistake. He'll just tell me, look, don't make the mistake again. Don't show up here again. He's not going to make a big deal about it. So what's the big problem with shogeg? The answer is the doctor's side. If I go home, after the doctor tells me I'm allergic to watermelon, and I throw away all my little red round watermelons and only save my big green apple, and I take a slice of apple and start eating it, and I look down and see my toes are green. I said, oh no, the doctor made a mistake. I'm not allergic to watermelon. I'm allergic to apples. I run back to the doctor and I say, doc, you made a big mistake. You said I was allergic to watermelon, but I was eating apples and the same thing happened. You said what happened if I eat watermelon. Doctor says, impossible. You're not allergic to apples. Let me see the apples you were eating. I show him the slice of watermelon. He says, oy vey. I hate to tell you this, but you made a big mistake. That is a watermelon. So I'm going to say, it's good, Baruch Hashem, it was a mistake, no problem, right? Nothing's going to happen, it was only a mistake. No, mistake, not a mistake. You're going to, unless somebody pumps your stomach or gets an antidote, it's going to affect you, whether you took the poison by mistake or not. So shogeg needs kapara mainly from the doctor's side rather than from the king's side. On the other hand, the opposite case. You intended to do an Aveira, but you lucked out and it was okay. You intended to eat treif. You wanted to eat treif for food. But by accident, you ate something glatt kosher. But you thought it was treif. Right? So, the halacha is you have to do tshuva. The chara, why? You didn't do anything wrong. You only thought you did something wrong. From the doctor's side, in a chanami, there's nothing wrong. I went home and I said, I think the doctor's a quack. I don't believe a word he says. And I'm going to eat watermelon whether he likes it or not, and nothing's going to happen to me. And sure enough, I take a pound of little red round watermelons, I eat them all, leave the cores to show the doctor that I ate the watermelon, and nothing happens. The doctor looks at me and he says, you're stupid, but you're lucky. Those are not watermelons, those are apples. That's why nothing happened to you. But if I thought I was eating watermelon, I wasn't, nothing's going to happen to me. But if I go to the king, right, and I stand in front of the king's palace with one of my little red round watermelons and I say, I don't care what the king says, I'm eating this watermelon, and the guards grab me and bring me to the king, and the king says, what's going on? And the guards said, we're not sure. Guy standing in front of your palace with an apple saying that he doesn't care what you say, he's eating this watermelon. The king right away realizes that I think that the apple's a watermelon. He's going to cut off my head. Why? I didn't eat that watermelon, but I was intending to rebel. So where I did an Aveira, thinking it was an Aveira when it really wasn't, the king's side is mostly involved. Where I didn't think I was doing an Aveira, but by accident I did, there the doctor's side is mostly involved. And that is the miracle of tshuva. Because from the king's standpoint, right, tshuva is a normal thing. If I did something against another human being, or I ate watermelon and the king caught me, and I really show remorse. I say, you know, I thought about this. It's a stupid thing that I did. I really regret it. I promise you I'll never do it again. A normal person will forgive me. A king will forgive me. Right? If I really show that I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. So why shouldn't the Ribbono Shel Olam forgive me? If I say I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. The answer is because the doctor's side. If I go and eat watermelon and my toes start turning green, I run to the doctor, I say, doc, I thought about this. I really regret it. I promise you I'll never do it again. Forgive me. You know what the doctor will say? Well, I forgive you. And you probably won't do it again because in 20 minutes you're going to be dead. Right? But, you know, pay my fee and I'm sorry, you know, to see you go. But I can forgive you from today till tomorrow. It's not going to change the situation. The fact that you can say you're sorry and you won't do it again and all of a sudden the poison disappears, that's a miracle. Poison doesn't disappear because you said you're sorry and you won't do it again. That's a miracle. So that is charata. And the charata... Oh, one second. So now, because there's two ideas to sin, you have to take care of both of them to do tshuva. You have to take away the poison and you have to square yourself away with the king. One of the results of tshuva is slicha and one is mechila. You ask the Rabbanu Shem to forgive you slicha and forgive you mechila. The way I understand it is, there are other ways. Slicha is more related to the doctor and mechila to the king. How so? The Rosham Shafal Hur says slicha is connected to hatzlacha. When you do an aveira, you're a failure. It's something in you. That's like the poison. You've done something, you've gotten sick, you've harmed yourself, and you need that situation to be corrected. So that's called hatzlacha, that's slicha. You want the doctor to heal you. And that's what we say in davening. Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu. Fits perfectly. We speak to the Rebbe as a father who doesn't just command us because he wants obedience. He's concerned we do what's good for us and don't hurt ourselves. So we speak to the Rebbe as a father. Slach lanu. We didn't listen to you as a father. We harmed ourselves. We got ourselves into a lot of trouble. Right? So slach b'matzliach. Correct what we damaged ourselves. Even ki chatanu chait is shogeg. Even if we did it unintentionally, the harm comes. So correct the harm that we caused to ourselves by not listening to you as a father, which is the same thing as a doctor, because even if we sinned unintentionally, there's an effect. Mechal lanu malkeinu, mechila, I think has a connection to the word machol. Machol is a circle, a dance. You dance in a circle. When you have a good relationship with somebody, so it's like a full circle. I do my part, you do your part, and we have a circle. When you break the relationship, you break the circle. Even more, you're dancing with somebody, right? So everybody's happy. You're dancing in a circle with them, and when you rebel against the Rebbe Shlom, he gets out of the circle. He's not interested in dancing with you anymore. You're not interested in dancing with him. So we say, Mechal lanu malkeinu, as a king, and we broke our relationship, bring it back full circle, come dance with us again. Ki pashanu, pesha is merit, is rebellion, because we rebelled against you. So the terms fit very, very nicely. It also explains the following. In the Avodah of Yom Kippur, the Shmoneh Esrei of Yom Kippur, the ending of the Birchas Kedushas Hayom is the following. Ki ata solchan l'Yisrael u'macholam l'shiftei Yishurim b'chol dor v'dor. Umibalodecha ein lanu melech mochel v'soleach elohata baruch ato Hashem melech mochel v'soleach labanosein. Problem is, in the beginning we said solchan umachalan. We mentioned slicha before mechila, and right after that we said melech mochel v'soleach. We mentioned mechila before slicha. Why change the order? Why not keep it consistent? Either slicha first or mechila first. So I'd like to explain it the following way. There's a difference between solchan and macholon and mochel v'soleach. Mochel v'soleach describes what God does. Even one time. He is soleach u'mochel. He forgives in two ways, like a king and like a doctor. Solchan and macholon describes what God is. He is a forgiver. Okay? Now, what's the difference between that, whether we're describing what he does or what he is? What he does is on a one-time basis. He does it, time by time. What he is his nature, is what he always does. I've got the proof to that in Gemara above Metziah. The Gemara says like this. The Torah says, if your neighbor has a donkey, and he overloads it, and the donkey crouches down, you have a mitzvah of hocking, talking, pick up. Roveitz tachas masol. So the Gemara says, that's only if roveitz. If it's something the donkey does once in a while, when you overload it, but lo ravtsan, not if the donkey by nature is a donkey that every time you put something on its back, it crouches down. It's allergic to work. There are people like that. But if the donkey's like that, right? So then, what's it called? Then you're not chayif to help the other guy. Go get another donkey. You got a lemon. Right? It's not my fault. It's your fault. You bought a ravtsan. So rovates for lo ravtsan. What do you see from there? That ravtsan means the donkey always does it. That's the nature of the donkey. Rovates means it's doing it now. It's not the nature of the donkey necessarily. That explains a chazal. The Gemara says, "Kol Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu Vatran Yevasrun Meowi." Anybody who says that God just overlooks sins, his insight should be overlooked. Yet Chazal say, "Vitra Hakadosh Baruch Hu Al Gili Araish V'Chazdom Avodazor." Well, the answer is, "Viter." Yeah, he can be mevater, but he's not a vatran. It's not his nature to do it all the time. That's a difference. In any case, so therefore, when we're talking about the Rabban Shalom being a solchan umachalan, means that he forgives us all the time, both as a doctor and as a king. Which is bigger chiddush? Right? Which is the bigger chiddush? That he forgives us all the time as a doctor or all the time as a king? So a doctor, yeah, you keep getting sick and keep coming back for a shot, for getting your stomach pumped. The doctor may be annoyed, but he's not going to be mad at you because you keep coming back. Right? He may be annoyed at you. But mad? Not going to be mad at you. So you keep coming back. I'll heal you. Pay me. I'll heal you. But if the king, you go to the king, you eat the watermelon, tell the king, "I'm really sorry. I'll never do it again." An hour later, you're back there. The king says, "What are you talking about? An hour ago, you said you'd never do it again." He says, "Yeah, but now I mean it. Now I won't do it again." An hour later, you're back again. Eventually, the king is going to get fed up with you and cut off your head. So the fact that he forgives you as a king over and over, it's his nature to do it all the time, is a bigger chiddush the king than the doctor. So then we say, atosolcha, not only do you forgive us by nature all the time as a doctor, you even forgive us all the time as a king. But when it's talking about one time thing, the bigger chiddush is the doctor. Because a king, an earthly king, can forgive you, right, if you show remorse and you commit yourself not to do it again. But a doctor can't forgive you, right? He can't say, "Okay, I forgive you, and now the disease is going to go away." The fact that the Rabban Shalom can forgive you, and the disease will go away, is a tremendous chiddush. So when it comes to one time, we say mochel v'soleach. Not only do you forgive as a king, you even can forgive as a doctor. When we talk about doing it all the time, then the opposite is true. Not only do you forgive all the time as a doctor, you even forgive all the time as a king. So that's slicha and mechila. What is kapara? We say slach lanu, mechal lanu, kapir lanu. What's kapara? Kapara, the Sfarno says, and I saw others say it also, kapara will not take away your sin. It reduces the sin and mitigates it and makes it possible for the tshuva to help. What's kapara? Yom Kippur. Certain sins, tshuva won't help until Yom Kippur comes. Sins you did at Alav with Kores. Won't what's it called? Help? No, a lav, regular lav, right? You won't get forgiven completely until you do tshuva and Yom Kippur comes. If you did a lav with kares, tshuva, Yom Kippur, and yisurim is also a kapara. Death is a kapara. Those things won't take away your sins by themselves. Just because you got Yisurim, or just because Yom Kippur passed by, or you got Malchus, or even a death penalty, is not going to take away your sin. You have to do tshuva. I always like to compare it that the tshuva is like if you have a soiled garment, so the tshuva is the detergent. Takes out the effect of the dirt. Takes the dirt out of the garment. That's tshuva. But sometimes the dirt is so settled in that the detergent won't help. It won't take it out. What do you have to do then? Put it in a pre-soak. You pre-soak the garment in something that will not take out the stain. The pre-soak will not clean the garment. After you take it out of the pre-soak, it's still there. But it makes it now loose that the detergent can take it out. That's kapara. Kapara are those things that loosen the aveira and mitigate them in order now that the tshuva can take care of it and take away the effect. That's kapara. Now how does it work? It has to be some kind of mechanism. So it makes sense to say that the main thing in the king part of the sin is that you commit yourself, you won't do it again. Right? If you make such a commitment, then the king will forgive you because you won't be a rebel anymore. He's not so concerned what you did in the past. He's concerned you don't do it in the future. So the Kabbalah Ha'asid, committing yourself to the future, that's mainly to the king. How about the Charata? What does that do? So even though we said that it's a miracle, tshuva, that just by saying you're sorry and you won't do it again, the poison goes out of your system, but there has to be some kind of mechanism. Says the Mabit in Beis Elokim, what's the mechanism? Charata. What's Charata? I regret doing something means mentally, if I could go back in time and do it again, I would erase it. I wouldn't do it. So mentally, I'm going back in time and erasing the sin. So God says, I'll take your mental erasure and make it real. And I'll erase the sin based on your mental erasure of the sin. Because if you would have had the chance to go back in time, you would have done it differently. There's another thing in the Torah where that same idea applies, by a nether. I make a nether, and then I have charata. Right? So if I regret making the nether from the beginning, then a chacham can come along and say, mutter lach, and it works because since I regret the nether, it's like I never made it. Mentally, I'm going back in time and erasing the nether. I think that's the reason we start Yom Kippur with Kol Nidre. Because if you're in doubt that you can erase a sin just by having charata, look at a nether. It works by that. So it should work. It gives us an understanding of what that tshuva helps, just like it helps to erase a nether. The charata helps. In any case, so that is the charata. The charata takes away the effect of the sin, and the Kabbalah Ha'asid is for the king. And really they go together, because how much you're committed not to do in the future depends how much you regret it. And how much you regret it depends on how much you committed not to do in the future. So they really go together, and the king part is predominantly the commitment, and the doctor part is predominantly the regret. How strong does your commitment have to be, and how strong does the regret have to be? So Shari Tshuva says, the greater the regret, the more it'll take the poison out of your system. The lesser the regret, you know, a person can see 10 agurot go down the sewer and regret it. Or he can find that the stock market crashed and his entire fortune is lost, he also regrets it. Same word. But there's a big difference between the regret in the second case and the regret in the first case. So there's an infinite amount of how much regret you can have for an Aveira. Based on how much regret you have, that's how much the Aveira is erased. Sometimes it's erased and there's still something left, and sometimes erased completely, and it depends on how much regret you have. Same thing goes with the Kabbalah Ha'asid. How committed are you not to do it again? So the Rambam says, in order for there to be complete tshuva, you have to be so committed that God can testify that when you say that I will never do this Aveira again, you'll never taka do it again. You never do that Aveira again. That's scary, because it seems to say that if we ever do the Aveira again that we did tshuva for, we didn't do tshuva, or at least not complete tshuva. And the truth is that I speak for myself, but I have reason to believe it applies to other people too, that most years we do tshuva on Yom Kippur, and by the next year we pretty much do the same sins again. What's the proof? We don't get a different machzor every year with different vidui. Even more than that, every year they give out these sheets, you know, from the Chayodim with all the Averas on them, Aleph Beis, whatever. I never heard somebody say, oh no, I got that sheet last year, could you give another one, a different one? Right? I took care of that one last year. They always take the same one again the next year, so they must have done those Averas again. So according to the Rambam, if you ever did the Avera again, then you didn't do Tshuva, so then Yom Kippur didn't help for us. So the Mefarshim explained, doesn't mean that if you ever do the Avera again, you didn't do Tshuva. What it means is the following. And that which it says, that how do you know about tshuva, right? If you get in the same situation, you don't do the Aveira again. That's about tshuva, that you mastered the tshuva. But that doesn't mean that it's not tshuva without that. Say the Mefarshim, what it means is like this. If at the time you did the tshuva, let's say Nihi L'Yom Kippur, you said from now on I'm never going to speak Lashon Hara again, and you really meant it, and if you could freeze that moment in time when you made that commitment, you never would do it again. You really meant it, and at that moment you meant it, and you never would have done it again if you could freeze that moment. Then you did tshuva, the Aveira is erased, the next day you speak Lashon Hara again. So it depends. If the reason you speak Lashon Hara the next day is because you never really meant it the day before, then you didn't do complete tshuva. But if the reason is because I did mean it, and if I could have frozen that moment in the Nila, I never would have done the Aveira, but now it's not Nila anymore, and I fall from my Madrega, and I'm weak again, and it's a new set of circumstances, and because of that I go back to the Aveira, it's not because I didn't mean it then. I did mean it then, and if you could freeze that moment, I wouldn't have done it. But you can't freeze that moment, it's a new situation, new Aveira, new thing. So that's how strong the commitment has to be. Now the question is, there's one more component of tshuva, vidui. You have to say this verbally. You can't just think to yourself, I really regret doing this aveira, I commit myself, I'll never do it again, and finish. You have to say it out. Now, if you had to say it out to your local rabbi, come to him, sit next to him, right, with a screen separating you, and say, Rabbi, I have sinned. And I say, yeah, tell me about, you know, I would have a much more interesting job, to tell you the truth. Maybe we'll institute that here.
Didn't you have to give a donation?
I'll even forego the donation. A lot of people say that. A little different intonation. In any case, but that's not what you have to do. Don't get scared. We're not. That's all you have to do. You don't just have to say it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And in fact, many aveiros you're not allowed to let other people know. If you do, it's a chutzpah to let other people know your aveiros. So all you have to do is let God know. So if you have to let God know, He knows. He knows what you're thinking. Why do you have to say it? So some say that unless you say something, it's not as intense and committed. So for the commitment, like a nether, if you just think a nether, it's not a nether, you have to say it. So if I want to say I'm committed not to do this again, I have to say it for my sake, not for God's sake. If I don't say it, it's not as strong a commitment as just thinking it. And the male of the charata also could be that if you don't say it, you're not really embarrassed, you hear yourself say it, I did this, it makes you more remorseful or whatever. But there's another idea to vidui on the doctor's side, on the charata side. And that is, okay, we said that mentally regretting something makes it as if you went back in time and erased it. And God makes that real. But the mice, you still have the poison in your system. Your neshama still has that dirt on it. How do you get it out of your system? That's vidui. The word vidui also, aside from meaning confession, also means to cast, to throw. Where do we find that? In the Eicha. Yadu evin bi. They threw stones at me. So the word yadu can mean to throw. When a person drinks poison, the first aid by many poisons, not poisons that are acids or bases, because you don't want them to go up and burn the guy's throat again, but poisons where the effect of the poison is that it's absorbed into your bloodstream, and that's what kills you. You want it to make sure it doesn't go into your bloodstream. So the first thing when you see somebody took an overdose, so they took poison, make them throw up. Either give them something that makes them throw up, put your finger down their throat if you don't have anything, and make them throw up so it won't be absorbed into their system. They get to the hospital, they pump their stomach, first thing. So therefore, you want to throw out the aveira. You want to throw it up. So how do you do that? By saying vidui. Till now, the aveira was part of me, it's in me. I want to throw it out. Oshamnu, bogadnu, gozalnu. It's like cleansing myself of the aveira by spitting it out, by externalizing it. And that takes it out of my system. The regret makes me go back in time. It's like erasing it in time, and the Ribbono Shel Olam makes that real. And to get the effect out, I have to spit it out. That's called vidui. With that, I always like to explain, that's why we sing the vidui. It's a universal custom. Right, the Ashkenazim, Oshamnu, Bogadnu, right? If a goy would walk into shul, and by Sfardim, I think it's even a more lively nigun for the Oshamnus. So if a goy walked into shul and he says, "Hey, what are you guys singing about? Oh, we did this abomination, that abomination, or whatever," I think, well, I don't mind. That's what you guys sing about, Oshamnu, Bogadnu. But the idea is that if you couldn't wash, couldn't bathe, take a shower for a year, and you accumulated all this grime and grease and dirt, and then a year passed by and somebody said, "There's water available, go take a shower," How would you feel when you took that shower? Exhilarated. That's how a person's supposed to feel on Yom Kippur. You're finally able to clean off your neshama once a year, and it feels good. People sing in the shower. That's why we sing the vidui. Because when you're getting clean, huh?
The silent ones, we don't sing them.
The what?
The silent ones.
Yeah, okay. Because we sing it when we're doing it all together. Right. It's a good he'ara. Right. Why don't we sing it in our own personal Shemoneh Esrei? It's a good. I gotta think about it. But maybe it's only when a public bathhouse that you sing. In any case, so people sing in the shower. So you sing because you really feel good that you're getting cleansed from these aveiros, which leads us to the last point. Libby Goldberg, many years ago, asked a question in a shir. It was up in when Marava was in those caravans. I remember it was a shir that I was giving. I don't remember what it was. It was a Yom Kippur shir. It was during the week, wasn't on Yom Kippur. And she said, "Lechora, Yom Kippur is a exercise in futility, because like we said, most of us go back to most of the averas we did the year before." Right, one way or another, say the same vidui again. I always have that feeling called Nidre night. I start saying vidui, the Rosh was looking down and saying, "You again? Last year you told me you're not going to do these things again. What are you back with? The same mazda, the same words, same things." Right? And it's not just last year. You told me that 2 years ago and 3 years ago, and we can keep going back. These kids over here, Baruch Hashem, they don't have that. But the Rosh says, "You know, I heard this already. I'm getting tired of this. Every year you come back here, Yom Kippur, tell me the same thing." So, except for, like, you know, really serious averas that are out of character, most of us, the same things, we go back. "Oh, I didn't make a bracha, I didn't make a bracha avonah, I eat something, I wasn't sure if the hashgacha was good." Those kind of things that are in those lists, we say the same thing every year. By the time Yom Kippur comes around, we've done those things again. So, what does it help? Why do we do this every year? That was her question. And the Rebbe Shem put in my mind the following marshal, and every year we add something to it. I have about 9 things of the how the marshal fits. I'm going to tell you only 3 of them, because I can't remember the other 6 unless I look them up. 3 of them, though, were the main ones at the time, I think. And that's the following. I said you could ask the same question as why we bathe children. A kid, 2, 3 years old, right? The kid, you give him a bath, boy or girl, and within minutes, he's as filthy as he was before the bath. Why did you waste your time? You wash his clothes. Within 5 minutes, the clothes are just as dirty as they were before you cleaned them. I would say we should make a new minute. Instead of the first haircut at 3, the first bath at 6. Okay? Don't bathe the kid for first six years. And then we'll make a big party. You have another reason to eat, right? Pekelach or whatever, right? In the shape of soap or whatever. That, right? Kid's first bath. Kid's first bath at 6 years old. Why don't we do that? Why do we do it every day? Because if you don't wash that kid every day, the dirt would accumulate in 6 years that he would be full of sores and infection, and there'd be nothing clean. So this way you clean him every day. He can't accumulate more than one day's worth of dirt, so it's handleable. That's one thing. Same thing. If we would go without a Yom Kippur every year, that we at least clean off our neshamas once a year, the averas would accumulate to such a point that it would deteriorate our neshamas. It would eat it up. So at least once a year we're clean, we start again, we can't accumulate more than 1 year of sin. Second reason. If you wouldn't clean that kid every day, eventually, maybe the time he's 3, 4, and he hasn't had a bath yet, right, he would look like a little piece of dirt walking through the house on 2 legs. So you would see this little dirt ball in your house, and you would relate to him like that. This is a dirt ball that happens to walk around my house, right? And you relate to the kid like that. But the fact that you bathe him every day, you discover that underneath all that dirt is a nice little kid, right? Beautiful little, clean little kid. So then when you see that dirt ball walking around, you realize there's a kid underneath. If we wouldn't do tshuva once a year, at least on Yom Kippur, we would begin to think that we're really dirty, filthy, really rotten people. But once a year, we get to see what's underneath all of that, and really you should look at yourself and say, "No, not so bad." Just the opposite. Not Yom Kippur that makes you feel like you're terrible, just the opposite. you know what, if I get rid of all this, I'm not such a bad guy. And you look around, you see, my neighbor, less than a year, but he's not such a terrible guy. Lamaisa, look, he means well, and he looks like an angel, and he's dressed in white, and he's standing like a malach, and we're all friendly for one day a year, right? Lamaisa, what's it called? You get to feel that, you know, underneath all of that, it's not so bad. I'm really not such a good bad person. And then the rest of the year, you're able to know that, yeah, underneath all of that, there's something good. You see, you have a much more positive view of yourself and of other people. And the third reason is that if we would never clean this kid till he's six, he'd have no incentive to be clean. Because he'd never know the feeling of what it means to feel to be clean. But you'd clean the kid, and he gets that feeling of nice to be clean. So when he's a little kid, it doesn't make any difference. When you get a little bit more mature, he has this feeling, maybe I'll stay clean 5 more minutes. Gets a little bit more mature, maybe I'll stay clean till tomorrow. Maybe till the next day. And you give him the incentive to want to remain clean because he's had that feeling how nice it is to feel clean. The male is the same thing with us. If we wouldn't know how nice it feels to be clean of Averas, we wouldn't have the incentive to remain clean. But every year we get a little bit more mature. Maybe we stay clean instead of till Motzei Yom Kippur, maybe till 2 days after, maybe till Sukkot, maybe till Hanukkah, maybe till Purim. Maybe with some Averas we go back right away, but some we want to remain as much as we can with that nice feeling of Yom Kippur, even more into the year. So for those three reasons, even though we may go back and have a need another Yom Kippur, almost exactly the same the next year, but Lamaisa, we've got for something. For those three reasons, same reason you account for something, for cleaning the child and cleaning his clothes. There were 6 more things. You can all figure out yourself other things. Somebody wants something that it's not for the sake of the person, it's for the sake of other people. Because if the kid was walking around like that, people would stay away from him and he'd stink or whatever. So it's for the sake of other people. Or really, there's no purpose, but the mother has rachmanis on the poor kid. She wants the kid to be clean. Not for the Rebbeinu wants us to be clean. So there are other ideas that people have mentioned over the years, but I think those are the three major ideas. I think you all have a Gemar Chasima Tova, and in case I taught you things that weren't right over the year, I ask Mechila for that from the Shir, even though you probably got rewarded for being here and putting in the effort, even if you heard wrong things. So, you know, even if you slept through this, probably you got Schar for being here and making the effort and coming. So really, that's true. If you come to a Shir and you put in the effort, you'll get rewarded. And if I teach you wrong things, even though it's a Gemara Bavashas Mashallah, but not like that, but could be that for the effort you got in. Unless you didn't put in any effort and you just listened to what I had to say and it was wrong, then you didn't learn any Torah. But if you put in the effort, you get the reward for the effort. And to be Hashem, we should continue with the topics that we had, which Taka were going very nicely in the coming year, and keep up this ninig now, not to deflect it because of Yomim Tovim or whatever, and just keep this shiur. And if we have to, and it's important to learn halacha, we'll find other times to do to be mekayim that. Okay.